Dear listeners, before the show starts, a brief update to let you know that from now on, Review Systems will bring you a show every other week. As always, if you have thoughts or feedback, we'd love to hear from you at contact@rospod.org. Thanks for listening.
When a patient with a complex medical history like Michael arrives under my care, it's like opening a book to page 200 and being asked to write page 201. That can be challenging enough. But on top of that, maybe the middle is mysteriously ripped out, pages 75 to 95 are shuffled, and several chapters don't even seem to be part of the story. Meanwhile, everyone around me is urging, right now.
That was Ilana Yerkowitz, one of our guests this week, reading an excerpt from her article published on UnDark, entitled Paper Trails, Living and Dying with Fragmented Medical Records. She joins us today to talk about her article, along with Carolyn Lai. Carolyn is lead author of an article published in JAMA Open entitled Assessment of U.S. Hospital Compliance with Regulations for Patients' Request for Medical Records. They both join us today to talk about how difficult it is to access medical records. We look at this from the provider side through Lana's story of her patient Michael and how inadequate communication of medical records harmed his care, and from the patient side through Carolyn's very important recent study showing that many hospitals do not follow regulations meant to protect patients' rights to their access their medical records. I'm Audrey Provenzano, and this is Review of Systems from the Harvard Center for Primary Care. Check our website, primarycare.hms.harvard.edu, and click on our West podcast along the top to subscribe for more information about our guests, links to their articles, and an archive of our previous shows. Thanks for listening. Welcome, Carolyn and Ilana. Thank you both so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
Carolyn, can you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your background?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Carolyn Lai, and I'm a current third-year medical student at the Yale School of Medicine. And I'm actually pursuing a MD-JD joint degree, and I'm set to start at the law school next fall.
Hi, I'm Ilana Yerkowitz. I'm a current fellow physician in hematology and oncology at Stanford University. And I wrote this piece, Paper Trails, for UnDark magazine.
So, Ilana, tell us a little bit about Leah and Michael Champion, whose story you tell in your article.
So Michael was a patient that I cared for when I was a resident at our local VA hospital back in 2016. And he was an elderly vet who had a complex medical history. He had a history of stroke, diabetes, required straight caths for bladder problems. And Leah, his wife, functioned as his primary caregiver at home. He initially came to us in the hospital with fevers, and we found that he had a urinary tract infection. And then I tell the story of how he was actually discharged to two separate nursing facilities, came back into the hospital twice, and the second time actually in the intensive care unit, all due to preventable medical errors that came from the nursing facilities not appropriately receiving his medical records. So the first time, there was a problem with his insulin. And we had to adjust his insulin when he was in the hospital because of his infection. And the new dose of insulin actually didn't go through to the nursing facility, and he came back to the hospital with extremely high blood sugars. Hmm. And the second time, unfortunately, there was a problem with the free water that he was getting through his tube feeds. And we also had adjusted that when he was in the hospital the second time around, went to a different nursing facility, and ended up not getting his free water, and came back into the intensive care unit with a sodium of 164.
Oh,
and just to put in reference, I think a lot of your listeners probably know, but the upper limit of normal is 145. So he was basically comatose from not receiving his free water. And Leah was his fearless and staunch advocate who was by his side the entire time.
You know, I think everyone who works in healthcare knows Leah and Michael's story in a way. We've all seen those sorts of things happen. What about Michael's story in particular inspired you to write this article?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, like you said, there are a lot of different stories that I could have told, because there's so many times that we've seen medical records fall through the cracks and medical errors result because of it. I think Michael's story was really striking to me because he actually had a lot going for him in terms of not having bad things happen to him. Hmm. So for one, he had Leia.
Yeah.
And we do see a lot of patients who are unbefriended, who don't have staunch advocates on their side. And he had a wife who was by his side, you know, 24/7, taking notes on his medical care to the extent that even people would ask if she was a doctor or a nurse. That's how well she knew his medical issues. And so she was advocating for him the whole time, and things still went wrong.
Yeah.
And so thinking about if they went wrong in his case, you can imagine how much more wrong they could go in for patients who don't have someone like Leia. And I think the other striking thing about his story was that everything was actually pretty local. You know, he went to a nursing facility the first time around that was 15 minutes from where we were. Second time around, also really close by. This wasn't a story of crossing state lines. You know, they should have easily been able to access our records. Everything was pretty close to each other. So, you know, if things didn't go right here, how can we expect any better for patients who don't have family members and for patients who are traveling even further? And I think the final thing about this story, and I think maybe even the most important thing, was Leia actually asked me to tell their story.
Mm.
She knew how serious this problem was, and she really was enthusiastic about sharing it with the public because she didn't want it to happen to anyone else.
Yeah.
I tried to do their story justice.
Mm. So, Carolyn, you look at this problem too in your research, but you know, more from the patient side, looking at issues that patients face when they request their medical records. So, you know, it sounds like you have an interest in law and policy around healthcare, but what inspired you in particular to look at this type of question?
Yeah, so our motivation for conducting the study was really based on our collective experience, hearing from patients and for some of our co-authors, their family members, their friends who were all having serious issues with requesting their records. And these weren't just issues of just cost or inconvenient formats, but they were also problems with all different parts of the request process, from not knowing what they can request, not knowing the processing times. And there are some people who we know who faced so many barriers that they weren't even able to get their records after many years of trying to request their records.
Oh,
and
gosh.
It's an important issue because in the privacy rule under HIPAA, this right to access is really clearly defined, yet hospitals across America don't seem to be abiding by the federal regulations.
Hmm. So what was your research question, and how did you settle on that question in particular?
Mm-hmm. So initially when we were thinking about designing this project, we wanted to find a way to really characterize the patient experience in the medical records request process. So we really weren't sure what to expect when we were doing the study, but we wanted to basically find out what it's like for patients to get access to their records and whether we were able to see if in all aspects of the request process, U.S. hospitals were compliant or non-compliant with federal and state regulations. So we sort of went in with a blank slate trying to see what we could find, and we were able to find a lot of areas in which hospitals really need to improve on the request process.
So tell us a little bit about the methods. You know, what was it? I believe you used some surveys as well as some phone calls. And how did you choose which hospitals to include?
We basically call this type of study a secret shopper study.
Hmm.
And basically, me and an undergraduate student that I worked with, Ray Gao, we called a group of top-ranked hospitals in the States. And we posed as a patient's family member who wanted to know more about the request process. And we basically followed a script that we wrote up prior to making these calls that asked questions about all the different components of the request process. So questions about what information can be requested, in what formats, at what cost, and what period of time we would expect to receive the records. And we chose top-ranked hospitals because we thought that at the very least, these top-ranked hospitals should perform on par to the national average. At least that's what we were expecting, because more highly ranked hospitals tend to have more resources, and we thought that they would be able to provide records to patients more efficiently. So that's sort of why we focused on top-ranked hospitals. And then other than that, we also compared what we found over the phone calls with the medical records departments with what was written on the authorization forms for requests. And those forms are typically available online at the hospital websites.
And what did you find?
Yeah, so we actually had quite a number of important findings, and I think it's probably useless to sort of break it down by the different aspects of the request process that we had questions about. So in terms of the information that can be requested, when we looked at the authorization forms, we saw that the authorization forms really didn't provide patients with a full set of options for what they can request in terms of like individual categories of information. So hospitals might not put down the option to request provider orders or consulting notes. And if patients don't see that option, they don't know that that option is available to them. For us on the provider side, we know all these components of an electronic health record, what types of notes are available. But for patients, that's really not the case. And overall, only about 53% of hospitals had the option to request the entire medical record on the forms. And under HIPAA, patients are able to request the entire record, but that's not really made apparent to patients on these forms. And then for the different formats that can be requested, we found that mail was the only format that all hospitals were able to provide records to patients on. Email, online patient portals, and CDs were really not widely provided by the hospitals. We also found that for costs, there was really a wide range of costs. There were many hospitals that provided provided records free of charge, but there were hospitals that were charging upwards of a few hundred dollars. The most that we saw was $541.50 for a hypothetical 200-page record, which is really, really appalling to see. $500 for 200 pages is really unaffordable for most of the population. And in addition to that, we saw really great variability in what was on the forms and what we got over the calls. So patients really weren't getting accurate information if they were just looking at the forms. They would have to call or somehow figure out what the actual cost was.
And it sounded like sometimes they couldn't even tell. So they, if they requested a record, they might get stuck with a bill that they had no idea of anticipating how much it would be.
Yeah, there was one hospital that wasn't able to tell me what the cost would be because they said that the cost would be determined by an outside party. But patients really need to know that information to make informed requests for their information. And then the last sort of component of our study was looking at processing times, and we saw that there were hospitals that were reporting to us processing time ranges that were beyond the maximum time permitted by state law. And for them to not know that the state law is however many days or the federal law is 30 days is kind of shocking to see that they weren't relaying to patients processing times that were compliant to state and federal regulations.
Right. So there was this one finding I found particularly, I mean, I guess it's telling that it's not shocking to me, but so three of the medical records departments in the study you designated unreachable, meaning you had placed five calls and weren't able to speak to a human, and you had no return call within 7 days.
Yeah, that's correct. So two of the hospitals had basically I basically called and it went to an answering machine that where you could like pick different options, and it would never let me pick an option where I could speak to someone. And then the other hospital, I was able to leave a voice message and they followed up, but I wasn't able to take the call, so I called them back again to leave a voice message and they never followed up after that.
Have any of them, since you published the study, have any of them responded?
Actually, none of these three hospitals contacted me, but some of the other hospitals have since contacted me just to sort of follow up on the findings. Some of them were hospitals that were compliant, and they just wanted to know how they performed in all the different categories so that they could try to provide the best service they can to the patients. And then there is... I was also called by a hospital that we called non-compliant, and we sort of talked about our findings with them.
So, Alana, in your article, you explore a lot of the policy that has been written about this in the last couple of years, because, you know, policymakers have recognized this as a problem and have tried to address it. First in 2004, when George W. Bush opened the Office of National Coordinator of Health Information Technology, the ONC, and then further in 2009 with the passage of the HITECH Act. Can you tell us a little bit about those efforts and why they've been so woefully insufficient?
Yeah, that's a great question. Like you mentioned, all of this started in 2004. That's kind of when the movement began from the government point of view, to start thinking about how to improve our system of medical records nationwide. And, you know, before 2009, actually, most records were paper records. So going back to 2004, that's when President Bush created the ONC, the Office of the National Coordinator for Health Information Technology, and that was within the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. And the entire goal of the ONC was to lead national health IT efforts and to coordinate these efforts nationwide to implement the most up-to-date health information technology that we have, particularly around the issue of medical records. So in 2009, Congress then authorized and funded the legislation that was known as HITECH, the Health Information Technology for Economic and Clinical Health Act, much simpler to say HITECH Act. And the whole point of that act was to stimulate hospitals to convert their paper records into electronic charts. And this was a great effort because actually many of them did so successfully, hospitals and doctors' offices. And I think people have been practicing, you know, long enough can remember when most of our records were handwritten. And for the most part, that's not the case now. But the problem with this legislation was that even though it required or it pushed hospitals and doctors' offices to turn their paper records to electronic charts, there was no related mandate that said that those systems had to talk to one another. So there all ultimately ended up being hundreds of different electronic vendors that sold their product to different hospitals and doctors' offices. And then for a lot of those vendors, they didn't communicate with each other. So the systems were different. They were not interoperable. And that made it really hard for physicians to exchange critical health information about their patients. And in the piece, I interviewed Karen DeSalvo, who is actually, she was the national coordinator for ONC from 2014 to 2016. And, you know, and she was tasked with trying to improve interoperability or improving the system of communication between all these electronic vendors. And she had $100 million from the government to hit that goal, and progress was made. For example, I think anyone who's used the vendor Epic knows about some of the applications that they have, like Care Everywhere, which now allows us to see records from other hospitals who also have Epic and agree to share their records within the same platform. But it still didn't solve the overall problem. So there's being slow steps taken to improve interoperability and communication among these vendors. But I think we've all still been in situations where a patient comes to us and we don't have access to any of their records because the systems don't communicate with each other. Mm-hmm. And we can click all the buttons in the chart, and we can click the applications like Care Everywhere. And there are still a lot of places that don't share those records. So I think we are slowly making progress, but I think we're still very far away from a universal system of shared electronic records that's accessible, you know, in an easy and standardized format for all physicians and patients to see.
Yeah. Do you have a sense of what there is in the future for this? I mean, with Care Everywhere, is it only ever going to be other Epic hospitals and systems that one can see? Is there a future where between different vendors, we would be able to share records?
Yeah, I think that's the million-dollar question. And I want to emphasize that actually a lot of this is, there's bureaucratic issues at stake, you know, and there's competitive issues at stake because some vendors are, they're incentivized, you know, not to share records. And some vendors actually charge fees in order for other vendors to then access that patient information. But it's also just a really complicated engineering problem.
Yeah.
You know, I spoke to several people about this when I was doing research for the piece. With hundreds of different vendors using these really non-standardized platforms, trying to find an integrated way to communicate all of that information, you know, has really been an engineering nightmare. And I think there's a really good analogy, like why it's so important to have the standardized process. I also interviewed someone for this piece, Mark Savage, who compared using electronic records to renting a car. And he says, imagine you walk into a car rental place and you're looking for the gas pedal. Well, I don't know, maybe it's in the back seat. And I think for electronic records, the analogy really stands because medical decisions are so complex as is. You know, the hardest part shouldn't be trying to access the records
right. And
trying to figure out where the brake and the gas pedal is. I mean, that part should be really standardized and accessible, so then we can focus our efforts on the more important questions like patient care.
Yeah. So what ultimately happened to Michael and Leia, and what do you hope to do with telling their story?
Michael actually, he passed away in July of 2018, which was 2 months before the story came out and when I was in the process of finishing the story. And what happened was, so he was home on hospice services and he had a pneumonia, and then the pneumonia started showing signs of coming back. And it was actually on Michael's own terms that he decided not to treat it and withdraw care. And Leia told me after that she asked him if he wanted to treat it or let it go. And his last words to her had been, let it go. Mm. And I think that was very significant that it was on his own terms, because everything else that I wrote about that happened to him, you know, in the story were things that happened to him.
Yeah.
And this actually was on, it was his decision. And this was actually 2 years after he went home on hospice. So it shows how much fortitude and reserve, you know, Michael clearly had, that he survived 2 years after his prognosis was only 6 months. And, you know, I spoke to Leia after it, and she was at peace in the end with everything that happened, and felt like in the end he was as comfortable as he could be considering the circumstances. Yeah. And that was really important to me, you know, as I was their doctor, and also now as a writer telling their story, that they approved of how I told their story and I did it justice. And I hoped by telling their story, it shows a face of the huge problem that we're facing in this nation of fragmented medical records and how that affects real patients every day.
Hmm. Carolyn, we talked a little bit about the responses of the hospitals to this study. What other change do you hope to see that comes from your work?
Our goal with the study was to really concretely demonstrate the barriers that we knew patients were experiencing. We knew that patients were having issues with the cost that hospitals were charging them. We knew that patients were having trouble getting records in the format that they wanted, and also within a reasonable time frame. And we really wanted to validate the experiences that patients were having. And so far, what we really wanted to do was to prompt hospitals to make change and do better. So when we were finalizing the manuscript before we submitted the paper for publication. We contacted the hospitals that were non-compliant with the processing times just to sort of see what they would say in response to our findings. And actually, to our surprise, the hospital said that according to their tracked metrics, they're actually performing within the state regulation, and that they weren't sure why these hospital medical records departments were telling patients otherwise. So from those conversations, they were, at least they told me that they were going to talk to these representatives, talk to these outsourced call centers that they were contracting to talk to patients about medical records, to make sure that the training was there to provide patients with the most accurate and complete information possible. So I think that was a good first step. And actually, recently, at my home institution at Yale New Haven Hospital, I've been getting emails about being able to request the entire record on the online patient portal, MyChart, which is from the vendor Epic that a lot of hospitals use. And it seems like hospitals are trying to improve the process for patients, that they're trying to make these different formats more available to patients. And I think that we're moving in the right direction. And I hope that our paper was able to be a part of that, a part of making medical records more accessible to patients.
Yeah, I hope so too. Do either of you have anything else to add?
This is Alana speaking again, and I know I've kind of emphasized this a lot already, but I really can't state how strongly enough that this is a huge problem for patients, that it comes up all the time. That, you know, I chose to write about Michael and Leah's story, but there were hundreds of other stories that I could have told. And the burden of collecting and storing medical data shouldn't be so much on the shoulders of patients. You know, the system should be taking care of that for us, because patients are busy being sick. You know, they shouldn't also have to carry around the briefcases full of the papers to each doctor's appointment, trying to put the pieces together. The system should be taking care of that for us. So I'm so glad that other people are studying this problem and working on solutions. I can't emphasize how big of a problem this is and how much it impacts patient care.
Yeah. Well, thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us. This was a really enlightening conversation, and I really appreciate hearing Carolyn's perspectives.
Yeah, thank you so much. I was really excited to speak about this topic and to be able to talk about both sides of the conversation, Alana, from more of a provider side and talking about your experience with patients, and then from me sort of looking at the research perspective and sort of emulating the patient experience.
You've been listening to Review of Systems, a podcast featuring conversations about the changing healthcare landscape from the Harvard Center for Primary Care. I'm Audrey Provenzano. Check our website, primarycare.hms.harvard.edu, and click on RWIS Podcast along the top to find more information about our show, links to subscribe, and an archive of old shows. You can find links to more information about our guests, Ilana Yerkowitz and Carolyn Lai, and links to both of their articles that we discussed today. If you enjoy this show, please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen, and share with your friends and colleagues. You can find our guests on Twitter. Carolyn, what's your handle?
It's at Carolyn Lai, spelled L-Y-E.
And Ilana, what's yours?
At Ilana Yerkowitz.
Do you want to spell that for folks?
Yeah, good idea. It's I-L-A-N-A-Y-U-R-K-I-E-W-I-C-Z.
Great. And you can find me at Audrey MD MPH and our show at RWIS Podcast. Tweet us feedback and suggestions, or you can email me at contact@rwispod.org. Thanks for listening.